Every day, millions of men go to work questioning their purpose and how to leverage their gifts for the advancement of God's kingdom. Join us as we hear stories from other men just like you and me who have discovered the answer and are willing to share some wisdom they've learned along the way. Gathering wisdom is like dropping pennies in a jar. Over time, our jars fill up and overflow into the lives of others. Welcome to The Drop.
Welcome to The Drop. My name is Michael Pick. Today we're here with John Smith, who's the head coach of Cal Poly's men's basketball team. So welcome, John.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. So I'd like to hear a little about your family at first, and we'll go from there.
Okay. I've been married for 23 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have three kids. My oldest is about to be 24. My middle daughter's 22, and my baby is 18. My wife is from Seoul, South Korea, but she came over when she was 5 years old, so she's an American citizen. She's more Americanized than anybody, but that's my family, and yeah.
So currently you live in kind of two places right now, don't you?
Yes, yeah. Fortunately, you know, my wife has been such a big support of me in my journey with the coaching ranks. You know, there's times that I've left Southern California and we went up to Southern Idaho to coach, and she quit her job to do that to help me fulfill my dream. And now I'm here as a Division I coach, and she is a very powerful manager in the banking world, and she's got a promotion. So her job is in Southern California. So right now we're living in two places, but hopefully, you know, by the end of this year, she'll be up here for good, and she'll be working from the household. But I didn't want to uproot my family and bring them up here when I first got the job, because my youngest daughter was still in high school, and I just didn't want to tear her away from her friends. And then I also knew how hard my wife worked to get to where she was in Wells Fargo, and I didn't want her to give that up either. And, you know, sure enough, you know, this past week she got a promotion.
Congratulations. That's great. So I want to talk about your job a little bit, but I want to hear a little more about your family and your background, because I've gotten to speak to you a little bit, and you have this kind of amazing family tree of basketball.
Yeah.
Can you kind of tell us about your family tree in basketball and all the prominent players that exist in your family?
Yeah, so it starts with my father. My father was the one that introduced basketball to all of us in the family, pretty much. You know, he was from Detroit, Michigan, and went to the Air Force first. And, you know, he was a late bloomer. He was he graduated at 5'11". But while he was in the Air Force in the first two or three years, he grew to be 6'6". And he was a point guard. So he was stationed in Riverside, California, March Air Force Base, and he was playing basketball just randomly. And legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian happened to be the coach at Riverside City College, and he saw him and asked him to come play for him. And next thing I know, I heard that my father got a discharge from the service to play basketball at Riverside City College. 2 years later, they won back-to-back state championships there. And he went on to play at Utah State for a year and University of Hawaii for a year. Then got drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks and played in the NBA for 3 years. He got hurt and played overseas for quite some time. And the ironic thing is I ended up coaching at Riverside City College. But out of high school, I played for Jerry Tarkanian, who coached my father at Riverside City College. And
was this at UNLV?
Yeah, I played for Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, I was a walk-on. Let me rephrase that. I learned my craft at UNLV during those years, 87 to 89. I didn't play much, but I was able to learn a lot from there. My oldest brother is also a basketball coach. He was my coach my senior year in college. I left UNLV and ended up, you know, coaching at the high school ranks, and he convinced me to get some knee surgery to come play for him, and And I finished up playing for my brother at Dominican University in Northern California. And now he is a WNBA coach. He's been a WNBA coach for 20 years. He's very successful as a coach. And my middle brother, Kevin Keefe's dad, also does some AAU coaching and basketball as well. So, yeah, our family is deeply intertwined in basketball, but it started with my father.
And you didn't even mention your kids yet.
No.
So tell us about your kids and their success.
Yeah. So my son, Jamal, kind of followed my path and my father's path. When he graduated high school, he was 6 foot, maybe 140 pounds, if that, and had no offers at all. And fortunately for me, I was an associate head coach at Cal State Fullerton. And my good friend, the head coach, Deidre Taylor, allowed my son to be a walk-on. So the first year he redshirted and just, you know, lifted weights and did everything he could. And next thing you know, he was 6'3 and 175 pounds. And by his sophomore year, he was starting for us on a team that went to the NCAA tournament. You know, so his path was a little bit different than others, but he made the best of it, you know. And then my middle daughter, who did not play basketball early, she would come to my camps and just sit around and just watch people play. And she picked up the game a little bit late. And, you know, by her ninth grade year, she fell in love with the sport. And by her senior year, she was a McDonald's All-American. And she accepted a scholarship to play at University of Cal Berkeley and played there for 2 years. And then she transferred to University of Louisville. And she played last year in the Final Eight, in the Elite Eight with Louisville. And she's back for her senior year this year. And my youngest daughter, Kylie, she kind of shied away from the sport because the spotlight that her sister and her brother was on everywhere she walked. And her and I are very similar. You know, everywhere I walked in Riverside, everybody would say that that's Lucky Smith's son. There was comparisons.
And your dad was called Lucky.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Kylie had those same comparisons with her sister, so she shied away from the sport a little bit. But to this day, I always say she's probably the best shooter in the family. And she could have been really good if that's what she wanted to do. But everybody's path is different, and as we all know and as we're here to talk about. You know, God has a plan for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. It's very impressive, frankly. So tell me about your college career. You ended up your last year, you played for your brother's team.
Yeah.
So what happened after that?
So after that, I left UNLV, and I came back, and I, at the age of 20, I started coaching the freshman team in high school, at my high school. And Mike Barty, one of my mentors, my head coach, he's still coaching. He's one of the winningest coaches in California high school history. But he knew that coaching was in my blood, but he told me, he's like, listen, you're not going to be a great coach until you get playing out your system. Because I would be in practice trying to kill those guys, playing one-on-one, competing with them instead of teaching them, right? And he said, why don't you just try and figure out a way to finish out and play? And during that same time, my brother was fortunate to get the head coaching job at Dominican University. And he called me. He's like, listen, I need you to come play for me. And, you know, as we know, you know, it just didn't happen that way. God had a plan, right? So I got surgery on my knees because I had hurt my knees prior to going to UNLV. And I got surgery on my knees and ended up playing for my brother and had a phenomenal time up there and got my degree and started coaching with him for a year. And then came back down to Southern California to try and pursue my hopes and dreams of being a high school coach and a high school counselor, and I did.
So when did you first learn that you wanted to be a coach?
It's, you know, it's ironic that it's funny. Everybody asks that. And, you know, and I think I shared this with you. Like when I was a little kid, you know, everybody would say that's Lucky son, that's Lucky son. And I kind of shied away from basketball a little bit as a little kid. And my mom and my grandmother kept us in church. And I used to walk around our apartment complex, and there was a lady that was 100 years old that couldn't read, and she was the nicest lady. So she would ask me to read the Bible to her. So I started reading the Bible to her, almost every week, and I thought I was going to be a pastor. And then, come have it as I got into my teens, everybody would tell me how good I was in basketball, and so I started steering towards that way. But there was something calling me that said that, have a plan. And I always remember my father telling me to have a plan. So right then I said, okay, I'm going to pursue basketball. This was about the age of 12, right? I'm going to pursue basketball. And he's like, well, what's your plan? Well, my plan is, I want to play basketball as far as it could take me. And I want to play in the NBA like him. I want to play in the Olympics, all that. But when I was done, I always said, I want to coach and teach at the high school level. Because it was something about my interaction with the lady. Her name was Miss Davis. And seeing her face and her response to my words triggered in me. And it made me say that I wanted to have an impact that way somehow. And as a basketball coach, but I also wanted to be a counselor and help kids understand of staying on the path of graduating.
So, Miss Davis, all those years back, how old were you when that period happened, when you were reading the Bible to her?
I was probably 9, 10, and 11, around there.
That's a long time for a 9-year-old to stay engaged with something.
Yeah.
Looking back, do you think it was for her, or do you think she was doing it for you?
I definitely, looking back on it now, as you get older, you realize she was doing it for me. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty rough neighborhood that we grew up in. And a lot of the friends that were in our apartment complex, some didn't make it out, right? And for some reason, my father and my mother, and I didn't share this with you, I grew up with my mother instead of my father, right? Mm-hmm. Basketball took him away, but it was okay. He was still in my life. But my mother raised 3 successful, strong men in a tough neighborhood. And part of the reason is because of what you alluded to. They kept us in church. And Miss Davis, looking back on it, that was her way of keeping me off the streets.
Wow. So you were raised in the church with your mom?
Yes. Okay. My mom and my grandmother. Yes.
All right. What kind of church did you go to as a kid?
It was a Baptist church.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so after, fast-forwarding a little bit, after these formative years, you make it out of a rough neighborhood. Basketball's your goal, but you have God as a foundation. Mm-hmm. When did you make the connection in your head that God had plans for you in basketball?
Probably once I got done playing basketball. As I was playing, I never connected the dots because I jumped around from school to school, and part of it was injuries, but I didn't show the faith and the patience that God teaches us, right? And so I didn't connect the dots until I left and started coaching and realized that God was working me in a certain way to get me prepared for what I'm doing now, so to speak.
And so your plan was to be a high school coach.
Yes.
And you've gone above that.
Yeah.
Now that you're coaching at the highest level of collegiate basketball in the country.
Yes.
When did God put that as part of your plan?
Wow. That's a great question. I'm gonna tell you, I was a high school head coach in '96, and stayed there for 2 years, and my wife and I just poured into the kids as much as we could. And even though you're pouring into kids, there's some people that just don't appreciate it. And there was a parent that really didn't appreciate it. So I said, I'm going to go to the college level. So I went to the junior college level, and I said, if a parent doesn't appreciate it at the junior college level, they can go to whatever college they want to. They're not bound by the boundaries of the districts, right? So I went to the junior college level as assistant coach. 2 years later, I became a head coach and had some success at my first head coaching experience at San Bernardino Valley College. In year 4, we went to the Final Four. And the next year, my dream job at that time, I thought, this is it. RCC opened up, where Coach Tarkin, who I love dearly, who taught me everything, and my father, his legacy is there. If you walk in there, their banner and everything is up there, Lucky Smith and Coach Tarkin, right? So that job opens up. I get there, and I'm coaching there, and by year four, we win the state championship.
Wow.
And I stayed there for 9 years. And by year seven or eight, I started getting complacent, right? But I was teaching in the classroom. And one of my students came up to me, and when the Fullerton job opened up, I got offered the associate head coaching job at Fullerton. I was still struggling with leaving because I built an empire at Riverside and had stability. Born and raised in that community. But one of my students came to me and said, "Coach, I heard that you might take a job at Cal State Fullerton." I was like, "Yeah, I don't know yet." And she comes up to me and she's like, "Coach, what are you worried about?" She's like, "I think your light needs to shine on a bigger stage." And like she's like, "God told me to tell you that." And I was like, "Wow." You know, and right then and there, I knew God was speaking to me. I had to leave, and I left and went to Cal State Fullerton, and I haven't looked back.
And how long did you coach Cal State Fullerton?
I was there from 2013 to 2019, so 6 years. And by year four, we had won the Big West Championship at Cal State Fullerton.
Wow.
And took over a situation similar to what I took over here at Cal Poly. So trying to do the same thing here.
Okay. So obviously you've been a tremendous success in basketball and as a player. What are some of the qualities that you believe that God has given you that have allowed you to be so successful in coaching basketball?
The ability to be patient and, to mentor kids, you have to understand that it's not always going to be peaches and cream, as they say, and to understand the importance of what the word coach means and where it derived from. Coach used to be, with you hook it to the back of a horse, and a coach trailer carries precious cargo from one place to another. And I heard that term as a young coach when one of my pastors was speaking about what God does, trying to get us from one destination to the other, right? And we are his precious cargo. And that stuck with me, And so I take every kid as if they're mine, and I try and pour into them and get them to understand that I truly care about them more than just a basketball player. Some kids understand it, some don't. Some just get frustrated because they're not getting what they want out of it right now. It's quick. This generation, as Generation X, as or Z, whatever generation we're in.
I can't keep up.
it's more of a microwave generation. Where we grew up, where we had TV dinners, we put them in the oven for about 40 minutes, and then we're ready to eat. They're putting stuff in the microwave in 2 minutes, and they want it right now. So
how have you brought your faith in to the coaching locker room and the basketball court? What concrete things do you do? And maybe your players don't even know this.
Yeah.
But what have you done with the programs that you've run to bring your faith into action?
In the past, I was very outspoken with my faith, and people would try and tell me, you can't bring church and state this and that. I didn't pay attention to it, right? And at the junior college level, I would lead the team in prayer before games and after games. Every day in practice, I have a thought of the day. It could be a quote from some of my favorite authors or athletes, and sometimes I get Bible scriptures and I put them in there as it relates to what we're going through. And I've always done that. Here at Cal Poly, I was fortunate to hire David Hansen, who is a former Cal Poly player who is closely in line with me when it comes to our faith. And, he he has taken on that throne for me, and he leads us in prayer, and he also, you know, we offer, you know, Bible study through him if they want to, but we don't force it on them, and we, you know, we just let them feel, you know, God's calling and lead them to him, or you know, but I allow Coach Hansen to do a lot of the prayer before games, and you know, I haven't done it much this year. I've done it a couple times, but that's pretty much what I do. And then just how I carry myself, you know, is the one of the main things I try and tell the guys. Like, I'm not perfect, but you can tell. Every time before a game, I say a prayer to myself that I hope everybody sees the God in me and not the frustration of referees or fouls or winning or losing. I want them to see the God in me, and I try and hold on to that every game. I'm not perfect. I don't do it every game. I don't show it every game, but I try to.
What innate abilities have you been given by God that you think have made your success?
Probably the ability to reach and teach. You know, I always thought of myself as a teacher. And it goes back to reading the Bible to Miss Davis, you know, trying to teach certain parts of the Bible when I had no clue as an 8 or 9, 10-year-old what I was doing. But it carried over into my life that, you know, coaching is teaching, and you're trying to teach people how to operate in a positive way, in a successful way. And, you know, that's one of the abilities that I've had that I feel is innate, you know, that, yeah, I've had the ability to teach how to be successful.
What would someone say, an observer say, what does a John Smith team look like? What is the culture of a John Smith team that you bring?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, you know, it's I'm still trying to cultivate that culture here at Cal Poly. It's harder at this level when you take over a program that is accustomed to a different culture. So it's starting to get towards what a John Smith team would look like. And for me, in the past, anytime that someone saw a John Smith team, it was a team that had resiliency and competitiveness and cohesiveness. And those three things are something that I always try and intertwine into what we're doing. Never give up on a play. Compete for everything. There's a difference between competing and playing hard. And cohesive, you know, being part of something that's bigger than you. You know, just like, you know, us being in this world, you know. So those are some of the things that I try and intertwine into, you know, my program. And teams, if you see a John Smith team, you should see those three things standing out.
What are the three things again, please?
Resiliency, competitiveness, and cohesiveness.
Okay. And where did you come up with those three pillars of your culture?
You know, I'm big in sports psychology, and every place that I've coached at, I've hired or allowed a sports psychologist to work with our team. And I was fortunate the year that we won the state championship at RCC, we had a sports psychologist by the name of D.L. Saucedo, and he's phenomenal, and he's a mentor to this day to me. And one of the things, he's like, Coach, you do a great job of getting your guys to play hard, but think of it as, you know, what's the foundation of your program? And then what are the pillars that hold it up? And the foundation is you know, just, you know, a bond, a family bond, right? And the pillars that hold it up are the resiliency, competitiveness, and cohesiveness. And if you have those intertwined in your program consistently, you should have some type of success.